And you're listening to Bicycle Talk here on WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and I am sitting in for Ron Meniza, and I'm going to try to spend an hour talking about bicycles. This should be very interesting. Let's see if I can do it. I think I know enough about bicycles to tell you something interesting and talk about bicycles from my perspective. I have been riding a bicycle since the age of 4. So let's see what comes out. Maybe I can give you some perspective on what it's like to be a cyclist in the world and anything that's going on and what you're probably going to get with me, of course, is you're going to get cycling from the naturopathic perspective, because I am, after all, a naturopathic physician. So I am Fran Storch. I am a naturopathic physician, and I am going to be hosting Bicycle Talk for you today, flying solo, or I'm riding solo, which is something that I do fairly regularly. I do enjoy riding with other people, but if you're doing training, sometimes the exact training you want to do is going to be boring for someone else, and you just want to focus on your training, so you ride by yourself. So let's see if you find this interesting, all you folks out there in the bicycle world. So let's see, I have a few topics I wanted to hit. One of them is what it's like to be a woman on a bicycle. And that can be different, a little different than being a man on a bicycle. One of the interesting things that you find is that when you get into the world of cycling, it's more common to see men on bicycles than women. So, and especially the more advanced that you get, there tend to be more men on bicycles teams. Men are supported more widely in the world of cycling. So if you see a lot of the grand bicycle tours, all the coverage, or most of the coverage, not all of it, but most of the coverage is on the men's tours. I mean, you're lucky to be able to find coverage of a women's bicycle event on TV. It's hard to see. Whereas you get major coverage for the Tour de France, the Vuelta a España, the Giro d'Italia, all of those things that you cover men in cycling. And if you go to your local bicycle club, if you're a woman who's advanced in cycling, you're going to be riding with a lot of guys, and especially the more advanced you become. It's unusual. Anyway, that's been my experience around here. It's unusual to see women riding at an advanced level. And now, why might that be? There's some social issues. There's some reasons why I would say that in terms of like any sport, now you can have women who are much faster than some men, but overall a man at the same level as a woman in the sport is going to be faster and stronger than the woman. Just like with anything, and it's not about being prejudicial. It's about just how they're built versus us. That's why you have separate men's and women's sports, because the playing field is not even overall. Like I said, there are individual women who are way faster than most men. That happens. That is more unusual. So like I said, if you're going to the higher levels, the faster levels in any local bicycle club, you're going to see less women. And there's a few reasons. One reason will be that to some extent that women are not necessarily as fast. And there's some reasons that don't have to do with our anatomy as well. One of the things is you'll see that running is more popular for women than cycling. Why? Because it doesn't take as long. You can get a really good workout, a really intense workout, going for a run, and your whole day isn't eaten up. I mean, and it's unusual that you would go run a marathon. I mean, you might be training for a marathon, which means you're going to spend some more time training. But most women don't run marathons. If they race, they race 5Ks or 10Ks. And they can go out for a quick run inside of an hour, or at the most an hour, and get a great workout and come home and then take care of their families. And that's the reality of it, that if you have a family, running takes a lot less time. So it's a lot more popular that way. And if women, and even though, this is a time where men do take care of families as well as women do, and certainly if you're a man in a family, you are very responsible to your family, women often are more likely to opt for taking care of the family. It's not that, like I said, it's not that men don't, and it's not that we're not 100% at the place where men and women care for families equally. I still see this in my practice, and I still see this in the world, and I see this in the bike club. The men are more likely to be there for longer rides, higher level rides, and to be out there riding. And so, you know, if you're a woman and you have spent your earlier years very, very involved in caring for the family, and you haven't kept your fitness up at that level, you might not be as inclined to get involved in a sport that takes a lot of time. And that's the thing about cycling. It takes a lot of time. That if you tend to go, because you can be fairly fit or moderately fit and go for a long ride, and it will take you longer than if you went on a run. So to go for a 2-hour bike ride, you could do that at a slow pace and not take too much out of yourself. And it's something that you can do. So cycling in general takes time. It takes a lot of time out of your day. So if you have a lot going on, and if you're, you know, you have two kids in a commute, it's probably not going to happen, but it's not going to happen for the guys either. I still think there's something that appeals to men more than women in terms of cycling. I'm not entirely sure why that is. You know, there are people who still are afraid to get on a bicycle because they're afraid to get on the road with cars, even though we have lots of ways to work with cars. It can be dangerous to be on the road with cars. Cars are dangerous to cyclists, and you have to be very respectful, and you have to be very responsible, and you have to, you know, do your signaling and ride as safely as you possibly can, and you can do everything right, and you can still get into an accident. So people of both genders can be afraid of that sort of thing. And yet we still see at the higher levels, you tend to see more men for a number of reasons. And some of the reasons I don't entirely understand, maybe Ron can speak to that at some point. And one of the things is, as you get older in cycling, in order to stay at a decent level of cycling, you have to train. That's what I discovered, that as I got older, as I got later into my 40s, I had to train harder in order to just keep up with the, and you know, I can't ride at the highest levels of a club, and I'm not super fast. And so in order to maintain an intermediate level of fitness, I have to train. I have to do intervals. And, you know, not everybody wants to do that, because you do have to put a lot of time into it. Not everybody wants to put that time into it. And even with men, you know, people come and go from stuff. People come and go from various sports and various activities. And even men will continue to come and go from cycling. So what winds up happening is you do tend to ride with more men, especially as you get more fit. And that's a very interesting dynamic, because you wind up making friends with men. And hopefully the men around you are really nice guys. Sometimes that, you know, you get all kinds in cycling, of course, but it can be a really great thing, because if they're good guys, they're going to look out for you, and you're going to get to ride with them, and you get to practice your skills with them, and you get to improve and get faster with them, especially if you're tending to ride at higher levels. You know, if you watch the basketball teams, the women's sports teams, they practice with men. There are practice players who are men, and they play with them to get good practice. And, you know, the men can do things that are hard and fast and strong, and you get to practice with them, and you can practice riding alongside them, and you can practice drafting them, and you can practice various skills with them. And it can be a really good experience. If you don't get to spend time, like if most of the time you're spending time with other women, and then you get to spend quality platonic interactive time with men, it can be a really nice thing. And you can get to know different kinds of people while you're riding. But that's the reality of it at the higher levels. If you're not just riding on a team where you're riding with other women, you're going to be riding in a bike club, you're going to be riding with more men than women. That's just the way it is. At the slower levels, that may be less true. And of course, it depends on where you are. We're in northeastern Connecticut here. We're somewhat socioeconomically depressed, and we also have less people right here in this little corner of the world. So a club is not going to be as big here as it's going to be in Central Mass or somewhere in Massachusetts. So I noticed that when I go to rides in Massachusetts, organized rides in Massachusetts, I see a lot more women. And I don't know if the percentage is the same. So say you have, 10% of 700 is a lot more than 10% of 200. So I don't know if there's literally more women riding. There's going to be more numbers of women riding, but I don't know if the percentage is also higher up there. In places where there's more population, where there's more socioeconomic support, there may be more women. I don't know the numbers on that. But it is an interesting phenomenon that I have had to, I've always had platonic male friends grow, throughout my life. But this is something. Riding, cycling in community is something that has maintained that in an interesting way, where men and women ride together and have camaraderie, and a camaraderie that isn't necessarily sexual. It's neat. It's kind of neat. And I do appreciate the guys that I ride with who make me a better cyclist. So that's interesting. So other things about women on a bike, as I said, if you're someone who's taking care of children, you may not be riding as much unless you decide that you're going to ride with your children. And then to some extent, you will ride with your kids, and you can ride with your kids at varying levels. And there are ways to do that. As a woman on a bicycle, if you want to bring the kids along, you can get them bikes that they can ride on their own, and you can also get trailer bikes, where you get a trailer bicycle that attaches to your bicycle and they can ride behind you. And you can also get bicycle trailers. If you ever hear Ron talk, he's not a fan of the kinds of seats that sit on the back of your bicycle. He thinks they're dangerous, that if you go down, the baby goes down too, that you're much safer with a bicycle trailer. In other words, a separate encased trailer that has a tow line that is attached to your bicycle that trails behind you. Because if you go down, nothing happens to the kid. It's low to the ground. It's got four wheels on it, and it's very stable. So nothing, if you fall, nothing, the kid's not going to fall. If they fall over a little bit, they're completely protected, and they're probably not going to go down even if you do. So they're much safer. So learning to ride those can be helpful. You can ride your bicycle on the road. You can ride your bicycle on the trail, whatever works for you. And it can be a fun thing to ride with your family and to get your kids into cycling, to get yourself outside. Being on a bicycle is just so exciting. It's just one of the things you'll hear many cyclists say is that you get to explore, and you get to explore in a way that's harder to do if you're hiking or walking, because there's only so far that you can hike or walk. A 20-mile walk is nearly a day's work, even if you're a fast walker. So maybe you're gonna walk 26 miles or 30 miles in a day. That's still not very far. On a bicycle, I can do, depending on the terrain, 2 to 2.5 hours, and I can ride 30 to 35 miles, and see a lot of stuff that's really cool. And if you get fit, 30 to 35 mile ride is a decent medium length ride. And so it can be a really nice thing. The exploration that you can do on a bicycle is very exciting. You can decide to, make different turns. You can plan a route. You can go in different places. And it's really neat to see all those kinds of things. The other thing is, if you have support from your family and you're a woman, and you have support where you can get away, if you don't mind riding by yourself, it can be a great way to clear your head. It's so exciting. And I mean, I'm a person who loves to ride a bicycle. And when I feel good and I'm on my bicycle, I love getting to the top of a hill. I love using my skills. I love tucking and going fast down a hill. I love learning how to corner and successfully cornering and then accelerating out of that corner. I love to ride with people successfully in a pack. I love to draft successfully. So all the neat things about cycling. I love the feeling of ambulating down a road at speed and seeing the scenery and seeing different things around me. Because I'm a naturopathic physician, I'm interested in the plants that are around me. So I talked to my friend Lori, who is also a naturopathic physician. And she, before she was a naturopathic physician, she was basically an herbalist and had great training with Michael Moore, the herbalist, not Michael Moore, the movie producer, but Michael Moore, the herbalist, at, may he rest in peace. And she loved to do a thing called autobotany, where you look out the window of your car and you see the different plants that were out. Well, we both got into cycling in a big way, and now I do bicycle botany. So when I'm out on my bike, I notice what plants are out. And I can tell you, the ragweed is out right now. You can see it all along the roadside. It's really fat and happy. So if you're having allergy symptoms, it's time to get the neti pot out. I have mullein near my house too, these big spires of plants that grow, and they have these fuzzy leaves that sit in a circle, big fuzzy oval-shaped leaves that sit around the circle and in the at the bottom, and a big spire that comes up and these bright yellow blossoms that come off. And by the way, that mullein plant, those blossoms are very good for, they're antiviral and they make a very nice ear oil if you extract them in olive oil. Okay, so getting back to bicycles. So it's a great way to clear your head. It's a great way to reduce stress. It's a great way to see stuff. And it's a great way to get out, and it's a great way to get exercise. And if you have weight concerns, it's a great way to lose fat, especially if you do different kinds of cycling. All right. So that's going to bring me to my next topic, which is basic cycling nutrition. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that because that's something I can offer as a naturopathic physician to the world of cycling. So if you ride a bike, what do you eat? Well, it depends on how you ride a bike. If you don't ride very hard, if you're not riding to push yourself, if you're just a recreational cyclist who likes to ride to the store and back and you ride pretty slowly and you don't put in a lot of effort, then you would eat for your health, whatever that is. You don't have to do anything special. I mean, you certainly don't want to get on a bicycle and be starving. So if you feel like you need a snack, it might be good to carry some fruit. Fruit's a good idea because fruit will give you carbohydrates and water, and you should carry water with you. And if, like I said, if you're not doing any kind of effort, you probably don't need much more than that, and you may not need anything at all. It's probably a good idea to carry a water bottle. I like people to have water with them anytime that they're exercising, at least to have water. If you're going to be exercising for less than an hour and you're not going to be sweating very much, you probably don't need electrolyte drink or electrolytes in your water. Just water will do, and a little bit of fruit if you're hungry, if you need it. And you may not need the fruit even if you're not pushing yourself very hard. So what we get into is if you're getting more into cycling as a sport and you're pushing yourself. So now nutrition becomes very individual. It really depends on the person. There's all kinds of things you can buy. You can get bars and you can get gels and you can get shot blocks, little blocks of chewy stuff. You can just get trail mix. A couple of companies now have waffles, and you can get waffles that have gluten in them and waffles that are gluten-free. You can get no end of sport drinks. You can get sport drinks that have calories. You can get sport drinks that are low calorie. And you can get sport drinks that have protein in them. So which one should you get? I don't know. And this is the thing, the thing that's hard about nutrition. One of the things I'll say, if you are riding long or you're riding hot or you're riding and doing intervals, then it's important to dial in some specific nutrition. You have to figure out what works for you. Different people are different. If you talk to Ron, Ron can sit down and eat eggs and toast and then go out for a long ride. I can't do that because I have a much slower digestive system, and most people are more like me than they are like Ron. And so you have to figure out what you're able to eat before you ride, if you're going to go for a decent ride, or if you're going to go do intervals where you want to perform, or even if you're going to race. It's going to be different. If you're a person that metabolizes very rapidly and metabolizes protein, you may be able to have a sport drink that has protein, and the ratio of protein to carbohydrate is usually, it's the other way around. Carbohydrate to protein is usually 4-to-1. That's one that was studied to provide endurance. Well, I tried doing a 4-to-1 protein to carbohydrate sport drink once, and my belly looked at me and said, "What do you want me to do with this?" And it just kind of sat there. So it wasn't going to work. I kind of have to do carb stuff when I'm on the bike, lots of electrolytes and stuff with a bit of carbohydrate in it, and I have to eat my protein off the bicycle. And some of you are going to find that you have to do your heavy nutrition off the bike, and that you can only eat what's going to get you through the bike ride when you're on the bicycle. I find for me that it's very difficult for me to do heavy fat or heavy protein while I'm on the bicycle. That basically when I'm on the bicycle, I'm a vegetarian. I can't even do much in the way of dairy. God bless Woodstock, the rest stop on the steeplechase that has cheese. I did have a couple of pieces of cheese and they did sit rather well. But, you know, 2 pieces and that was it. You know, going for an ice cream rides are tough. And I tend to prefer to eat very little ice cream. Now, mind you, frozen yogurt ride, I found that did work. That was okay. If you go for a frozen yogurt ride, some of you with slower digestion might find that if you're on a ride and you want to have a frozen treat stop, that you might do better with frozen yogurt than ice cream, simply because the frozen yogurt tends to be non-fat and it doesn't sit in your stomach as heavy, so you might digest it a little bit more easily. I had no problem with the frozen yogurt. And certainly, if you get a sorbetto or a sorbet that has no dairy in it, that probably will hit your stomach just fine as well. But some of you, if you digest very easily, you could have an ice cream stop and do just fine. People stop and they have lunch. And if I'm doing a ride that's where I'm putting out some effort, I can't do that. I have to eat easily and lightly and favoring carbohydrate. And when I say carbohydrate, for me, that's going to be gels, or it's going to be the little blocks, or, you know, the little chews. Or you know, I can eat fruit. I can do some level of nuts. If the protein that I'm consuming is vegan, I tend to do better with that on a bicycle. And then the not vegan protein I just have after the ride, and I replenish that way. But during the ride, it's going to be more carbohydrates, and my protein and fat of choice is going to be some level. I can do some nuts, especially if it's a long ride. But to do animal protein, for me, that doesn't work. For some people, that's going to work, though. So nutrition is going to be very individual. If you're a person with a slow digestion, you're going to find that you're going to want to eat as little as you can get away with to power your ride, and yet you don't want to starve yourself. I have a friend who was who backed off his carbohydrates a bit too much, and then he found that he had no energy. And you'll find that if you're doing cycling, you're really not going to be able to go completely low carbohydrate, as some people do. And again, everybody's different. And I do have somebody that I know who is basically doing a low carb, high fat diet and has trained his body to burn fat as a fuel. And that works for him. And he's doing great and his energy is wonderful. Some people can do that. I don't think I could do that, because I found that when I drop my carbohydrates too much, I can't get up the hill. And so I have to eat some carbohydrate. And that carbohydrate can be in the form of fruit. It can be gels. It can be blocks. It can be even those, you can get those chunks, little chunks that you can get. You can make them yourself, or you can buy them in the store. And they're basically, powdered or nut butter of sunflower seed butter, pumpkin seed, and they can have fruit and actual nuts in them. And they go down very nicely, and they can give me a boost. And you can buy bars too. And again, depending on your needs, what bar works for you is going to differ. So dialing in your nutrition can be a challenging thing. So then what about sport drinks? Well, there are just so many sport drinks out there. As I said, you can get sport drinks that are just that are just electrolytes, sport drinks that are electrolytes plus carbohydrate, and sport drinks that are electrolyte plus carbohydrate plus protein. And different people are going to do different things with those materials. If I'm going for a short ride, I might be willing to do a low-calorie sport drink. So you can get fizzies. Different companies make fizzy products where you get a little tablet and you put it in water and it's got carbohydrate in it. Only a little bit of carbohydrate in it, but and so it's low calorie. So one of those tabs may have 10 calories in it, which is not a big deal, but it has a lot of electrolyte in it, and that will be helpful for me. And if I'm doing a short ride, I will tend to use something like that because a short ride for me is going to be something like an hour. And even if I'm doing a recovery ride, I want my muscles really nourished. So I'm probably not going to do plain water. And, you know, if you're training and you're an athlete, you may want to always at least have some electrolyte in your bottle because you're going to just have those electrolytes available to replenish your muscles as you go. If you're doing a longer ride, the reason to do carbohydrate and salt in your water bottle is not only to replenish the minerals you're losing, it's because carbohydrate and salt draw water into your body faster than plain water. So if you're sweating a lot and you're working out pretty hard, then you want to have some carbohydrate, at least some carbohydrate and electrolyte. Now, which brand you buy is up to you. And the different brands have different flavors. They have slightly different compositions. They'll often have a sugar like glucose in them. They might have fructose. They might have maltodextrin, which is a long-chain starch. They might have proprietary long-chain starches. So they usually have some combination of short-chain and long-chain starches and sugars, some sugars and then some starches in them. So one is going to be bioavailable readily and one is going to be available over time for you. And both of those are useful. And so if you're doing a training ride, you probably want to have some of that on board. So even if I'm going out for an hour, if I'm doing intervals, if I'm doing poppers, or if I'm doing longer interval sets, I'm going to have some carbohydrate and electrolyte in my water bottle. And if I feel hungry before the ride, I'm going to have a little kind of snack. And if I have the snack, it's probably going to be, for me, some kind of fruit and nut or seed blend. And it might even be, if I have a healthy bar of some kind, or if I have, you know, a healthy bread, I might have a little of that. I usually don't. That's usually not what happens when I do training intervals. I can't have a whole lot in my stomach if I'm going to do a very hard interval. So this is interesting. So you know that you might have heard that I have raced time trials this year. And in a time trial race, you're going to start out by warming up and you're going to get as warm as you can before the race. And then you're going to go to the start line and then you roll it out as hard as you can for whatever the distance is. So if you go to Gay City, the Expo Wheelman time trial it's basically in Manchester and Hebron, it's 6 miles and it's hilly and you're going to be pushing as hard as you can. So you want to eat as much as you can get away with before that ride, but the heavier part of my eating is going to have happened earlier in the day. I'm not going to have too much in my stomach right at the start because it's not going to stay there because I'm redlining. And some people can have stuff in their stomach when they're doing that and some can't, but I will have gels, goo, chews, stuff like that, and there will be carbohydrate in my water bottle. And for that short of a distance, you tend to do your drinking before the ride, and you might not drink too much during the actual race, unless you really have to. On a flatter course, if I'm able to reach down and drink, I might. And people on time trial bikes, they have a setup where they have a water bottle with a long straw. So even if they're in time trial position, they're in aerodynamic position, the straw just goes in the mouth and they can drink. So I don't have that kind of setup. That if I ever get very seriously into time trials or triathlons, I might get that setup. And then you can drink when you're during your time trial. And so that becomes important if you're putting up very hard efforts. And if you are serious about your race, I'm not so serious, but if you're really serious about your time, you're going to start doing things like that where you don't have to move and you can get nutrition while you are in the middle of your ride. So some people can do that 4-to-1 carbohydrate to protein solution. Ron can do that. I can't do that. You have to have a pretty decent gut transit time. If your gut transit time is fast enough, that may be something you can do. And you know what the best way to figure out what works for you on the bicycle is to try it. And the time you don't try it is at a time when you have an intention of performing. When you're about to perform, you do whatever worked before and you don't try something new. So if you're about to race, you don't try a nutrition thing that you haven't tried yet. That you try it on your training rides, or you try it on a ride where you don't care so much about how you perform. Or, you know, try it when you're by yourself on just a training ride and see how it feels. And if you do that 4-to-1 carbohydrate to protein drink and it feels like, and it doesn't move out of your stomach, then you know it wasn't for you. That's what happened to me. When I met Ron, I didn't know a lot about nutrition on the bicycle, and he was just telling me his information and telling me what he thought I ought to do based on what he did. And he said, "You're a machine. You're burning lots of calories now." So I said, "Okay." And I started eating lots of calories and starting to eat a lot of stuff before my rides or workouts. And I felt terrible. So I had to say, "Okay, this is good information for Ron, not for me." And I looked at him and I looked at me and went, "He's a guy. I'm a woman. He's a skinny thing. I'm kind of zoftig. I don't digest as fast as he does. I can't even eat as much food as he can eat. So I have to pay attention to that." So you, whatever I tell you, you have to go out and try it. You have to go out and try whatever it is. And here's the thing about brands of nutrition drinks. There's all kinds of cool sport drinks that you can buy, and you can buy them online, and you can buy them at the different bicycle shops and sports stores. You have to figure out which one works for you. And I found a couple of brands that do work well for me, and there are other brands that don't sit right with me. And you have to figure that out. And, you know, so again, it's great to get samples and it's great to try different things. You can get little single serving sizes of the different things. You get single serving packets. If you go to events, sometimes the companies will hand stuff out so you can try them and see if it's right for you. I have a couple of preferred companies. I'm not going to tell you what they are because, you know, this is community radio, but I encourage you to go and try different brands, get samples and see which ones work for you. Different companies make gels, different companies make, little shot blocks or make little, chews. And I know that certain ones, I have preferences for certain ones, and certain brands have improved their consistency too. And, you know, in terms of eating, when I like a sweet treat, I do like my chocolate, but I have to say I also like jelly things, and not so much gummy, but jelly things that you can bite into. I like that texture, so I like the sport chews. I also like to go to the candy store and get jelly babies, and I might wind up just having jelly babies on a ride. Now, if they would put electrolytes in jelly babies, that would be very exciting. You can get jelly beans with electrolytes in them. Those are available. And I do enjoy those. But I find that the chews from the sport brands have slightly better ingredients, that you're going to get less artificial colors and flavorings. You're going to get, that's something to look for as well, that how natural is the stuff that you're buying and what are the ingredients in what you're buying? Are there artificial colors? Are there artificial flavors? Are there artificial sweeteners? Are there things that you don't want in that product? And how natural do you want to go? And I would like to remind you that you can make your own sport drink. All you got to do, a nice proportion for just a basic sport drink, is pick your favorite juice, 1/4 volume of juice, 3/4 volume of water, a pinch of sea salt or a pinch of good quality salt like, you know, Himalayan salt or salt from Utah, and shake it up, and you got a sport drink. You're good to go. You don't necessarily have to buy a sport drink at the store. However, if that's all you got, then it's a good thing. And I do want to have a great shout out for coconut water. I am a big fan of coconut water. Hi. Coconut water is wonderful. It has a lot of electrolytes in it. It's really high in potassium, so it can be helpful in preventing cramping. And because it has carbohydrate and electrolyte in it, it can help to draw the water into your body more readily. So it's really good. And again, not everybody likes the taste of coconut water. Coconut water doesn't agree with everyone. I'm one of those people that does really well with coconut water. So I really enjoy having it in my water bottle. And I feel like it helps me perform better. And it certainly helps me hydrate better. So if I'm at a rest stop, and there's coconut water available, that's going to be a go-to for me because it goes down really easy and it hydrates me very well. That's not going to be true for you or everybody. It's going to be true for, but some of you are going to find that coconut water is really useful. One of the things you're trying to do is to keep your muscles going and trying to prevent cramping. So cramping is an interesting phenomenon. They used to think it was just because you're not well hydrated and you're losing your electrolytes. And that's probably true to an extent. But there is another reason, and that's that the nerves, your spinal nerves, especially in your lumbar area that are feeding your legs, are firing. And because you're doing this repetitive motion, you're pedaling, you're asking the nerves in your lower back to repetitively do this activity where they're moving your quadriceps, they're moving your hamstrings. So you're constantly moving these muscles, and so the nerves are firing over and over and over. And when you do that repetitive motion, nerves get tired of doing stuff, and they get depleted of stuff. But they also may not calm down, which is why having magnesium on board is really important. And your magnesium is so important as a cyclist. So getting your magnesium status good is good for anybody, but it's particularly good for the cyclist. So how do you get your magnesium in? Eat anything green. Anything leafy and green is going to help with that. There's a lot of magnesium in chlorophyll, which is the green pigment that's in all leaves. So the more green stuff you eat, the better off you're going to be. You can also get magnesium pills to take, and take those regularly. And I tend to recommend, and now again, you should consult your doctor on this one, but I tend to recommend going to bowel tolerance. So you take as many magnesium pills or drink or whatever, however you get your magnesium in, until you get some loose stool, and then you back off to the highest dose you can take where you had a comfortable, normal daily bowel movement. And that's your level of magnesium that you're going to take. And that's going to tend to keep your nerves from overfiring. If you drink that coconut water, it has a lot of potassium in it. If you eat your produce, you're going to get all kinds of minerals that balance that sodium that tends to make your nerves fire a lot. So your nerves will tend to be calmer because of that. If you take essential fatty acids, you're going to have a lot of nutrition for those nerves to keep them calmer as well. It's a membrane stabilizer. It makes it so that they're less likely to overfire. So keeping your essential fatty acids on board, your fish oil, I'm right now, I was talking about on my other show about black seed oil. I love it for inflammation and another source of essential fatty acids. I like to recommend fish oil because it's so bioavailable and it goes right up, and the nerves take it right up and use it for cell membrane substance, and gives you a lot of membrane fluidity and makes it so that the cell membranes they protect the nerves from overfiring. So getting those essential fatty acids on board is real important to prevent that cramping. And so then the other thing is that if you're in the middle of a cramp, and cramping, I was reading, it can happen to anyone at any time, and it is not because you didn't train right. It's because at that moment you were working really hard. In fact, the harder you work on your bike, the more likely you are to cramp. And of course, if you are sweating out electrolytes, that is going to make a difference. And also how well you nourished yourself, how high in your body is in magnesium, is going to make a difference in whether you cramp. However, if you're in the middle of a cramp, taking magnesium will only do so much. I have a couple things I do. One of the things that I do is I have electrolyte tabs that I got. And again, I'm not going to tell you the brand, but I have these cool electrolyte tablets that they have kelp in them, and they have a lot of trace minerals in them. They have magnesium in them. And since they're tablets, they're not capsules, I chew on them. So I taste the kelp and the salt and all the things that are in them. And so one of the things that happens There's these things called TRP channels. They're transient receptor potential channels. And so if you can access the TRP channels in your mouth and esophagus and stomach, you can help to calm those nerves down that are overfiring. And so how you do that is you can take in substances that stimulate your TRP channels. And that's why one of cyclists' friends and one of cramping people's friends is pickle juice. It's part of it, yet people think, oh, it's because you're getting the salt in. Well, the salt is part of the story, but I think part of the story is that you're getting salt in and it's in vinegar. And what happens when you consume vinegar? You screw up your mouth. And last night I was sitting with a friend, with Diane, the massage therapist, and I was sucking on a xylitol candy. And by the way, xylitol candies are very good for your oral health. And this particular xylitol candy, it's one of my favorites. It's sour cherry flavored. And apparently I was screwing up my mouth when I was eating it. And she said, are you eating something sour? I said, yeah, it's the sour cherry. She said, oh, I don't like sour stuff. And I'm like, oh yeah, I really love this. This is one of my favorite flavors of this. I really enjoy it. So I think the sour taste in the pickle juice and in vinegar and in sour stuff, that hits your TRP, your TRP channels. So that's one of the reasons that pickle juice works, because as soon as they're selling pickle juice shots now that you can buy, because somebody decided to capitalize on this, they were advertising them during the Tour de France. So those pickle juice shots, you get the pickle juice in and your TRP receptors get stimulated. It sends a signal to your whole nervous system and it can help to calm down those nerve centers that are sending out signals in your lower spine and tell the nerve to calm down in your legs, which is really cool. There's other things. So anything that will make your face screw up or act as sort of a counter irritant. Anyway, what you're doing is you're stimulating your transient receptor potential channels. And so there's a product now that has a spice blend that does that. And one of the big spices that you want to be in there is something spicy. So cayenne is another thing. So if you had a little pickle juice shot and there was a little bit of something spicy and salt in it, that would be a really good thing. And that might help to interrupt your cramping. And it's because, like I was talking about, I said it's a counter irritant, but apparently it's because it's accessing those TRP channels, the transient receptor potential channels. They are a group of ion channels located mostly on the plasma membrane of numerous animal cell types. There's about 28 types, and the ones that we want to get access to, and they're permeable to cations. Cations are positively charged ions. So sodium, calcium, and magnesium can get into them, which is probably why those chews that I'm using, those electrolyte chews that taste like kelp, they're wonderful because those receptor channels, I'm accessing them directly with magnesium. So if you can do that, if you can put something in your mouth that has magnesium in it, that can be helpful too. But also I think the spicy helps as well. So your different spices, cayenne is a big one, and salt, and vinegar, and anything sour is going to help to access those TRP channels. It's really interesting. And then, like I said, remaining hydrated all the time, but I think things to nourish nerves are going to be really important. Getting your potassium regularly, which means if you think that you're doing yourself a favor by overstarching as a cyclist, you're not doing yourself a favor. It's really much better to eat lots of produce, because the produce is going to give you lots of potassium and calming minerals. So those, you know, great green drinks and salads and stir fries and all kinds of, and fruit. And so it's a wonderful thing when you go to rest stops and organized rides and they have fruit for you. Fruit is a cyclist's friend, unless it's not a friend for you, because like we said, everybody is different. But fruit makes so much sense because you have sugar in a package. It's in fiber, which is going to help it release into your system slowly. And it's, if you get fruit that's watery, like we love to have watermelon on bike rides. Juicy fruits on bike rides are just godsends. Watermelon, grapes, cherries, berries and oranges can be just so delightful on bike rides because you're getting a lot of fluid, you're getting fiber, you're getting sugar. And then what's really smart is if at your rest stop, they have a salt shaker and you put the salt, you sprinkle salt on it. You know, if when you go to, when you go to South America and you get a fruit drink, and we're not just talking about when you get a margarita, because we're used to when you have a margarita up here, they put salt around the rim. Getting a sweet one, they put sugar around the rim. But usually the tradition is to put salt around the rim. Well, if you're in Brazil and you go get yourself an acai and berry smoothie, and they laugh at us in Brazil because we think acai is this magic miracle fruit. We sell it for $1 million a pound. and I mean a million in no particular term. We think acai is this incredible fruit and we sell it for a lot of money. They're like, you can get acai anywhere down there. You get a little acai drink and for not very expensive and you get it at the juice bar. So they put, you know, they'll put an acai and a bunch of berries and some rainforest fruits and you get your drink, your health drink, and it's not even an alcoholic drink. And they put salt around the rim. Why? Because it's going to help you to absorb the carbohydrate in the fruit and the salt is going to help you absorb the water that's in the fruit. So it's really smart. So keeping an eye on your hydration, your minerals, and your nerve health in general is going to make it so that your nerves don't fire as much. So part of the time to prevent cramps is off the bike. It's when you are looking at your nutrition, you're taking your magnesium, you're doing your hydration, and you're doing your essential fats. And I forget this, and I forget that, you know, oh, do I really need to take this fish oil? I don't know if I... Yeah, you do. All right? And fish oil, I'll explain to you, is really cool because if you're a vegan, I understand. If you don't want to take fish oil, it's fine. But the thing about fish oil is fish oil has... EPA and DHA in it, and EPA and has high levels of EPA and DHA. EPA is eicosapentaenoic acid, and DHA is docosahexaenoic acid, and those are two essential fatty acids that are directly used by your body to prevent inflammation, and they're used for the strengthening of cell membranes. They are used directly in those membranes, and so if you have those nice stable membranes, it's very absorbable. And so if you are not a vegetarian, fish oil can be really helpful and because of the inflammatory response and because it helps you rebuild your cells faster. And we deplete our essential fatty acids as athletes. We deplete them because we create inflammation in our body by using our muscles so much. And we're using our cells and we need to rebuild our cells. So it's both to help with the inflammatory compounds in the body, reducing inflammation and also rebuilding the cells. And you get, if you have healthy cell membranes on your nerves, you're going to cramp less. So that becomes really important. So fish oil is a great source of that. Now, if you're a vegan and you're like, Fran, I am not doing fish oil, no matter what you say. Okay, no worries. You can try doing nice oils, like you can try black seed oil, black cumin seed oil. You can try doing flax oil. Make sure if you do flax oil, it's a really good idea. Once you open flax oil, taste it. Make sure it's not bitter. Once it's bitter, throw it out. It's rancid. It's got free radical liability. It's not good for you anymore. So once you open the bottle of flaxseed oil, not a bad idea to take a vitamin E capsule and break it and put it in, and it'll last longer. Flax oil should taste lovely and nutty. It should not taste bitter at all. If it's lovely and nutty, it's got alpha-linolenic acid in it, which can be converted to EPA and DHA, which you can use for your cell membrane integrity. So flax oil can be a good source of that. The other thing is that you can get not so much EPA, but DHA. You can get that docosahexaenoic acid, one of the omega-3 fatty acids. You can get it as an extract of algae, and you can get it in reasonably high quantities. So if you're a vegan and you don't want to use anything coming from an animal, essential fatty acids can be extracted from algae, and you can get vegan supplements that have DHA in them. And if you are a crimpy person and you're vegan, this would be something to look at. But if you're a vegan, then you could eat green stuff. You could eat lots of green stuff, and you know, because everybody could eat green stuff, I hope. I mean, I'm begging you, eat green stuff, please. Okay. So those can be helpful too. All right. I also wanted to, so that's some basic nutrition. I will throw out a shout out to quinine. Now, I'm not sure how quinine works, except that quinine, again, has that funny tonic water, that quinine taste. You know, when you get tonic water, makes your face screw up. I'm wondering if it's accessing TRP channels. It might be, but it is something you can also enjoy and see if that helps you to prevent cramps. It is something I tell people about. All right, so the last thing I wanted to talk about today was periodization. And periodization is important. And one of the things I see cyclists do is bragging about how many miles they're riding a week. Now, if your goal is to ride 200 miles a week and that's your goal, then that's your goal. It's fine. It depends on what your goal is. If your goal is to ride as many miles as you can, then that's your goal and that's that. That can have health ramifications, though. So let me talk about that a little bit. When you just ride and ride and ride, you're probably not going to be able to ride unless you are, you know, unless you're gifted and, you know, you have a high VO2 max and you're at racing level. If you just ride and ride and ride and you have any sort of a life besides riding a bicycle that you like, you have a job, it's very hard to rest from that. And you've heard me talk about sitting in the cortisol bath. When you sit in the cortisol bath, that means that you are you're exercising in a way where you are in fight or flight the whole time and you're not resting. And so you're going at a moderate level all the time. Sitting in a cortisol bath is really not good for your body. That's why, I mean, triathletes don't like to hear me say this, but doing training for long triathlons is not really good for you. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be a triathlete. You just have to respect that. You're sitting in a long cortisol bath and you have to do a lot of things for your health to maintain the fact that you're sitting in that cortisol bath for a long time. Cortisol is your fight or flight hormone. It is present when you're doing any kind of exercise. A little bit of cortisol is a good thing because it pushes you to do stuff. And you can, if you use your cortisol, you can lift a weight, you can do an interval, you can ride a bike ride, you can do a whole bunch of stuff. Put sugar into your blood. It puts blood into your muscles. It puts oxygen into your tissues. It makes it so you can do whatever you need to do. But if you spend most of your time in cortisol, cortisol is a catabolic hormone. It breaks tissue down. And that's its job. Its job is to break down tissue, put sugar into your blood so you can run away from the bear. It didn't know you were going to go do a 50-mile bike ride. So here, if you're in this cortisol bath all the time, eventually you're going to break down. Your tissue's going to break down. Your muscles are going to break down. You're going to get more injuries. You're going to be tired. And even worse, you can get cardiovascular disease. So people don't realize that if you do long cardio all the time, it's not really good for your heart. Some cardio is good for your heart. But doing long cardio, having a goal of doing hundreds of miles every week, is really not good for you. Because it's very hard to recover from that, and you're spending all your time in cortisol. That's why rest is important, important, important. And that's what periodization is. So I found for me, now this is me, Fran, having a goal of riding 200 miles every week, that's not a thing that will work for me. When I was trying to get as many miles as I could, I started to get slower and slower, and I was tired all the time. And so that was not working for me. And if you look at my body type, I am not the body type that should be doing that kind of riding. I did more long rides this season than probably I should have. And I'm going to have to look at that again next year because I'm not entirely happy with how I performed. And, you know, I decided I was going to do I did these fondos. Now, mind you, the fondos were beautiful and I loved them. But I don't know if I needed to do the Grand Fondo every single time. Maybe next year I will do the Grand Fondo for one of the fondos, and I'll do the Medio Fondo the others. But Ron and I have talked about this, that a metric is a good distance. A metric century, 100 kilometers, 62 and a half miles, is a good distance for a long ride. Now, if you're sitting there going, I can't ride that long, don't worry about it. But you know, if you're a person who likes to ride your bike, a metric gives you a long ride and you're not baked for the rest of the day if you're fit. If you ride a century ride, it's really hard. I mean, it takes me a while to recover from that century ride. Although I must say, since I did ride 90 miles on Sunday, and it was a pretty, it was a relatively hard ride. There were a lot of hills in it. And I did nice nutrition the last couple of days, including taking my black seed oil. I feel pretty good right now, I have to say. I mean, I rode pretty easy the last 2 days. But I'm wondering if that black seed oil has helped me recover faster. I'm pretty excited about it. Anyway, periodization means that you're not going to go hard every day and you're not going to go long every day. And you're going to have a couple days a week where you either do nothing or you do something else or you go super easy. So, for example, this weekend we want to do a little extra riding. I'll probably do a medium distance ride on Saturday and not too fast of a pace, but not too slow either. And we'll do that on Saturday and, you know, we'll probably go 35, 40 miles, which for someone who is as fit as I am, that's a reasonable ride. The next day I'm going to go out for an hour, maybe an hour and a half, and I'm going to go really, really slow. My rule for a recovery ride is this: if I feel myself putting out any effort, I back off. And so I did a ride. It's on Strava. You can go find it if you want to. If you want to look me up on Strava, Fran Storch, you'll see that I did a recovery ride on the Airline Trail North the other day. I think the speed average there is 9.8 miles an hour. And I got a lot of kudos for that. It's really funny. But that was intentional. It was because I'd ridden 90 miles the day before and it was a hard effort and I was tired from it. And if I was going to ride, I was going to ride super slow. So I was on the rail trail, and I will tend to ride faster for recovery ride on the road. But on the rail trail, I was not putting out any effort. And that's the nice thing about riding on the rail trail. The same effort, you tend to go slower because of the resistance of the bike on the rail trail. So I went really, really slow. And then in order to get faster, and also because I am not skinny, I'm somebody who puts on muscle mass. So I have a bit more of a sprinter's body. I'm sort of a medium. I bet if I genetically checked myself, I would probably be more, evenly balanced, fast twitch, slow twitch. But certainly when I do things to build muscle, I build muscle relatively easily. So I should capitalize on that and do shorter distances, harder efforts. And so I really, really enjoy time trials. So when I train, I do training rides, and I will do time trials sometimes where I do, you know, depending on the day, it could be 6 miles, it could be 9 miles, and that's it. So I do a warm-up, 20-minute warm-up, do the time trial, and then roll home, easy. Or I do 30-second poppers with rest in between. So 30 seconds with 2 minutes rest in between. I do 10 of those. Warm up beforehand, roll home afterwards. And then I might do longer intervals. Like I have a thing where I go 5 minutes, three sets of 5 minutes with 3 minutes rest in between. And I should do a big shout out to Coach Amanda, who did a wonderful job of training me and teaching me about when she heard that I was interested in improving my cycling and that I was getting slower and slower and I was unhappy about it. She said, all right, you need to train. And she gave me a plan and she taught me about periodization. And then the big thing that we worked on this year was because I'm a bigger woman. She said, I want you to slow your cadence down. Mind you, slowing my cadence down helped me with cramping. Why? Because I'm not turning my legs over as much, so I'm not using the nerves as much. And so that was a help to me. That worked for me. Everybody's cadence is going to be different. Some people pedal slower than others, and some people pedal faster, and that works for them. But that worked for me. So that was really interesting. All right. So I just sat for an hour and did Bicycle Talk. It was it was a pleasure for me to host Bicycle Talk this week. I gave you a bit of a woman's perspective and a naturopathic perspective, and we talked about some good things around nutrition and cycling. I hope you enjoyed this. Ron will be back next week for more Bicycle Talk here on WHUS 91.7 FM. And so it's really great to change it up a little bit. So you were listening to Bicycle Talk, which is your show here at the University of Connecticut, about bicycles, bicycle advocacy, the bicycle business, bicycle racing, and all things good to do with bicycles. And every day is a great day to be on your bike. See you next week.